the Judiciary Committee meeting together. It's 6 minutes after, it's 11, I mean, yeah, 11, 1:36. The first day of April. Wow. Thank you for being at the committee, Senator Wilkowski, Senator McGuire, Senator Dyson, Chairman Colgill here, and I do expect that we'll see Senator Olson here shortly. The plan today, ladies and gentlemen, is we will take up the revisers bill, House Bill 81. My intention is to move it. We brought it up before us, had explanation. I didn't find anything in my study to cause question. We're going to have the House Bill 33 come up directly after that, which is knives, gravity knives, and switchblades. We're going to adopt a CS that has Senate language in it. I'll have the senator explain that. I'm going to introduce Senate Bill 65, retirement plans, which is a trust bill, and then House Bill 83. So we're going to go in that order. My plan is to try to get all that done by about 5 or 10 after 2, and then the remaining time will be on House Bill 69, depending on how many people call in for testimony today. House Bill 69 deals with exempt firearms from federal regulation, and it was the working version I that we dealt with that mandates that the Attorney General stand up for Alaskans under constitutional requirements if federal law changes things to do like with registering firearms or the size of clips, I think. And the Attorney General, I think, is going to give me some feedback on that. We'll see. But the first thing I wanted from feedback was the public. I've had probably as many emails on this particular issue as I have had on any issue we've dealt with, and we've had a couple of zingers in here. So House Bill 81 is a revisor's bill, and any comment or questions or thoughts from the committee?
Sure.
Yes.
Just an aside, but for you all of you's consideration, I've often wondered who is it looks through our statutes for things that are inconsistent, poorly written, obsolete, or didn't follow the clear intention of the legislature. And in talking with the lady that is in runs this revisers thing, they don't have the resources to do very much. And it's largely only suggestions that come to them from Department of Law. Anyways, I'm poking around at that some more. They don't even get the Duke Law Review that the Bar Association has, gets that reviews our stuff. So I think there's more to be done, lots more. And that's all. You got a motion?
Point well taken. Thank you for snooping around and working on that, Senator Dyson.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I move that we move HB 81 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes, if any.
Is there any objection to moving the revisers bill? House Bill 81? Without any objection, then we have moved House Bill 81 from committee. I'll notify the reviser of statutes. That will bring before us House Bill 33. House Bill 33 has been sent to us. We have the prime sponsor. Let me get there real quick here. 33. House Bill 33. I'm sorry.
Might be right into me. Excuse me.
Okay. Yes, it was hidden. Excuse me. We have the prime sponsor here, and I think we have a Senate CS. So, Senator Dyson, why don't you make the motion to adopt the CS, which I think is your version.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. I move that we accept as our working document Senate CS for House Bill 33. That's the backslash C version.
And I'm going to object so that I can hear from the prime sponsor of House Bill 33. So, Senator Newman, and then what I'll do after I talk with you, I'll have staff to Senator Dyson introduce that particular portion. The first question is, are you in agreement with some of the changes? And then give us your testimony.
Mr. Chair, my name is Representative Mark Newman. I represent House District 10 in the beautiful Susitna River Valley. And Mr. Chairman and members, yes, I do support committee substitute, Senate committee substitute for House Bill number 33/C.
All right, thank you. What my intention was then was to go ahead and have the senator's staff sit alongside you and introduce it, and then any comments you want to bring to that, if you could sit here for a few more minutes.
Yes, sir.
If you wouldn't mind. So we have Mr. Kopp here. We're adopting Senate language that's gone through two committees, and I wanted to make sure that the prime sponsor here not only agreed with it, but got a chance to hear the presentation. So, Mr. Kopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Chuck Kopp, staff to Senator Fred Dyson. This has been a cooperative effort with the bill sponsor, Representative Newman. Briefly, by way of introduction, we believe that in the criminal law, we should only have in place conduct that is actually blameworthy or that threatens public safety. Senate Bill 11 seeks to remove obsolete language that does not really serve a public safety interest. Going right into the bill language itself, House Bill 33, under this Senate committee substitute, makes it legal for a person 18 years or older to possess a gravity knife or switchblade. Section 1 of the bill states that the bill decriminalizes the manufacture or sale of switchblade or gravity knives and provides that a person may not transfer or sell a gravity knife or a switchblade to a person under 18 years of age unless they have written parental consent. Section 2 states that a person under 16 years of age may possess a gravity knife or switchblade if he or she has parental consent. Section 3, Mr. Chairman, adopts definitions for the term gravity knife and switchblade. This was highlighted for us in recent Supreme Court decisions where it was discussed that a statutory definition was needed. In State versus Strange, the court actually decided that that knife on the upper left of the board is not a gravity knife and is a illegal knife. So the definition is needed to be put into statute. Section 5 and 6 gives to the state the authority to regulate knives so that a municipality can regulate conduct in relation to knives only to the extent that the ordinance is the same or less restrictive than state law. This is similar to the state's present authority to regulate firearms and similar restrictions on municipalities in regulating firearms. This is for the purpose of the knife law being the same in Anchorage as it would be in Barrow or Homer statewide. Finally, Section 7 repeals AS 1161-220A5, which is the language that currently makes it illegal for adults to possess a gravity knife or switchblade, and makes it legal if you are a person 18 years of age or older. Just a little bit more, Mr. Chairman, researching the data on this from the Uniform Crime Reports put out by the FBI and adopted by our state of Alaska on the Alaska portion, it shows that less than 2% of all assaults on public safety officers are done with knives, and in the last 2 years there's been no actual injuries to a public safety officer by virtue of a knife. That's included as background information in the report, and also before this Judiciary Committee the troopers showed that knives were the least dangerous of all weapons to public safety officers and accounted for the last 2 years zero injuries or assaults on their persons. As far as impacts to all citizenry, knives are even less dangerous than hands and feet as weapons, in fact considerably less dangerous. So again, looking at the simple possession of these knives, which is before the committee, we looked and said, should this really be in the law as a Class B misdemeanor simply to possess? When we looked at the congruity of what our law says is a Class B misdemeanor surrounding this possession offense, and it's right next to if you possess a loaded firearm in a courthouse as being the same level of offense. It's right next to possessing a firearm in a daycare center. And it's right next to possessing a firearm in a domestic violence shelter, possessing one of these knives. So It just seems that in a state where you can legally carry a handgun concealed if you are not a convicted felon, it's incongruous that somebody would not be able to carry one of these tools with them as they would any other knife. And I would just point out to the committee, all these knives over there are legal. Certainly a straight edge blade that is already deployed is the fastest deployed knife because the blade is already out. And these knives, we feel here, just do not submit any or bring about any negative impact to the public safety. And so, Mr. Chairman, we bring forward this bill in concert with Representative Newman and ask for your consideration.
Representative Newman, any additional thoughts?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair and members. In consultation with many of our police officers, local police officers, Alaska State Troopers, including our Commissioner of Public Safety currently, I asked what they thought about this. And none of them had any concerns at all about this, felt very disconcerned about it. And then when I looked at the positive aspects, and you look at people, particularly in the fishing industry or industries like that, and the accessibility to be able to grab a knife in one-handed, to be able to cut yourself free from a fatal issue, you know, or a situation that you could be in. The benefits to have this is, you know, greatly, is very good, I think. And, right. And so that's my, you know, some of the thoughts that we've talked about, you know, again, with different police officers, people within industry that use these knives, and the benefits to remove all regulations on these knives that we have in the current CS, it seems to be the most practical way to go forward.
First of all, for me, thank you for bringing the bill forward. On this committee, I think the three or four of us have already heard this particular bill. So any questions from the committee members? I know one of the questions had come up about federal regulations. We're going to, if this goes through and becomes law, then we probably are going to have a different standard than some of the parks, for example. Can either one of you speak to that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I can. I did speak with the Jeffrey Olson. There was a memo that went out on that. He is the Sparks spokesperson in Washington, D.C. He said right now the Parks has a weapons enforcement policy, which is to comply with whatever local state law is. Specifically regarding knives, he said that that had never risen to his purview, either as a press officer or as an administrator, that knife regulations seemed to be far less pervasive in the park, but he was going to get back to us. But right. He said as far as they were concerned, it was less important than guns.
Gotcha. Any comment from the prime sponsor? Senator Wilkowski, yeah, I know you're not the prime sponsor, so I was looking at Senator Dyson when I said that.
I do support the bill. I did have was wondering if we were going to get an attorney online or in the room that we could I could ask that question, because that was the issue that came up in the last meeting. Was it appears that the federal law is different than the state law would be, and I just think it'd be good to educate Alaskans about what, because we have so much federal land here, and I know somebody in Washington may have said something, but they're not going to trump some federal marshal. So I think it'd just be helpful, Mr. Chair, to get that on the record and find out what exactly the ramifications are, just so Alaskans know what they can and can't do legally in our state, in our national parks and national lands here.
So you've asked about policy different directions. From the legal aspect, has there been any inquiry?
Through the National Park Service, the same Mr. Jeffrey Olson, who is, I would stress to the chair, is in a senior position in leadership in the National Park Service. He just encouraged us to work with the local Park Service office as we would to advertise any differences in the law. There are currently, as we know, differences in federal regulation pertaining to firearms that there are in the state, and we just work with those offices so they would have those posted as they do now, what can be used or not used within the park. It would be basically a public information, as this good senator raises. That would be our duty as a state to communicate.
So my expectation, it's not my intention to hold the bill up, but to follow this bill, my recommendation would be then to get either the Region 10 director or somebody who's a park supervisor in Alaska on how this might impact them And I would encourage you to have that before it gets on the floor.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Does that satisfy that?
Yeah, I'd feel more comfortable, I guess, if we had something in writing from someone from the parks, just saying this, and then that way, if someone is arrested, we can produce that. They'll be able to produce that to prevent prosecution. That's all my concern. I don't want to hold the bill up either.
Senator Dyson?
Yeah, thank you. I realize that two of my colleagues here are members of bar and are attorneys, and I take a very high view of the law, and I think we do the law a disservice when we have silly things in the law. And there are thousands of Alaskans carrying assisted opening knives like this, and they would be stunned to know that they're illegal. And it's just like, you know, other things that, to me, it trivializes the law and it makes us scoff laws. And so it's just another reason to do this. So, Madam Chairman, I move that we move HB 33. Committee substitute. Senate committee substitute.
Two things. First of all, I'm going to remove my objection on the adopting the CS. Secondly, I've got somebody from Eagle River who would like to testify, and I'd like to give them a couple minutes to testify, and then I will take this motion up. So we have Ray, is it Thivolt? Can you hear us, Ray?
I blanked out. Is it to me?
Yes, Ray. Please give us your name and any affiliation in your testimony.
You bet. My name is Ray Thibault. I have no group affiliation per se. I own a large knife store in Anchorage called Northern Knives. We do a lot of business here in the state. And I don't really have a lot further to add except to chime in that all of us there at the store deal on a daily basis with the different trades and the different industries, including law enforcement. But like the marine industry, firefighters, roofing, it literally is endless to where this would have a positive impact on all of the trades, the industries, and the professionals. Positive impacts on the safety, on the uniform, in the law, and totally, it removes gray areas with better definitions. I would have nothing negative to say about it, but I can certainly answer questions as far as I do deal with this day to day. I can give you direct feedback and things like that.
Well, the motion's been made to move the bill, but I held that motion in abeyance so that we could take your testimony. But the longer we talk, the longer the bill sits in committee.
Will do.
All right.
Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you. All right. Is there any objection to moving House Bill 33 as amended from committee?
Committee substitute.
Committee substitute, I'm sorry. Is there any objection to moving committee substitute for House Bill 33? All right. We'll move House Bill 33. It's considered. And let's take a brief at ease while we sign up on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we'll get back on record here. So the next thing we're going to do is we're going to introduce Senate Bill 65, and my intention is not to move today. This is the trust bill. We do have two people to testify, one person from my office. I'm carrying it this year. The vice chair has carried it in years past. This is a continued upgrading of our trust doctrine law. And I have staff here today who will introduce it. They have produced a nice tabbed sheet. So what I have here is Chad Hutchison, who is going to be helping us on this today. So, Chad, introduce yourself and walk us through this packet, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Chad Hutchison. I'm the staff for Senator Coghill. I also would like to introduce David Chaftel and Beth Chapman. They are going to be available online. They are the expert attorneys in this field.
What we have is Dave Chaftel and Douglas Vlatniker.
Okay. Okay. And we may have Beth Chapman also. But certainly David Chaftel has been available both on the House side and the Senate version of this bill and would be available to answer any questions. SB 65 has already received pretty wide-ranging support, including Denali National Bank, Wells Fargo Bank, First National Bank, Ketchikan, Northern Bank, Wells Fargo, et cetera. As Senator Coghill just referenced, historically, substantially similar versions of SB 65 have made its way through various sessions. In 2011, 2012, for example, existed, or substantially similar portions of it existed as HB 292 and SB 165. Both received bipartisan support. HB 292 was sponsored by Representative Thomas, Representative Grunberg, Representative Peggy Wilson. It made its way through labor and commerce, judiciary, finance, and was referred to rules where no further action was taken. SB 165 was supported by, made it through judiciary, was supported by Senator French, Senator Pascavan, and was left in finance. What is SB 65? SB 65 essentially just updates all of our trust laws in Alaska. I can give a background as to what a trust is, but I think this group is well beyond that part of it. Trust can be used, obviously, for family planning, if you have a child. Trust can be set up for the benefit of the child. Trust can be set up to engage, to manage assets where somebody's maybe not able to for whatever reason. And trust can be used to avoid time-consuming probate proceedings, reduce estate taxes. Why is SB 65 important? Alaska first modernized its trust laws back in 1997. The results were very, very favorable to the state. The statutes created commerce and jobs for a lot of different fields in Alaska, including insurance, the legal industry, the trust industry, banking. Alaska was essentially at the forefront in 1997. Since that time, other states have enacted very similar legislation and have basically caught or surpassed Alaska. And so the purpose of this legislation is to put us back on the cutting edge to make sure that we're at the forefront. It's going to diversify our economic portfolio and make Alaska highly competitive in the financial planning sector. It will bring money into Alaska and generate revenue for the state by encouraging people to plan their financial future and security here in Alaska, and that includes residents and non-residents alike. I just want to make sure this is absolutely clear, is that SB 65 benefits everyone. This includes families, includes individuals of all walks of life, and it provides for their long-term benefit. It provides tax benefits and increases their retirement planning options. So, Senator Coghill is in full support of SB 65, and if you have any further questions, please let Mr. Chaftel know, and he'd be happy to answer them for you.
And just for what it's worth, we also have the Division of Insurance Director here, Marty Hester. And online we have Dave Chaftel and Douglas. And I'm going to butcher that name, but it's Vlatniker, I think. So, Mr. Chaftel, you're first up on the list. Give us testimony, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm an attorney in Anchorage in private practice, and our office just focuses on estate planning and estate and trust administration. I've worked with a group of attorneys and trust officers and other financial experts since 1997 to recommend to the legislature various improvements to Alaska's trust and estates law. And the legislature has consistently over the years been very supportive and enacted provisions that, as Mr. Hutchison has pointed out, really placed Alaska up front among the various states in terms of having very advantageous trust and estate provisions for its residents and also for non-residents who desire to use Alaska's laws. As Mr. Hutchinson pointed out, the banking industry is fully in support of this bill. We really had essentially the same bill, except for a few provisions, last year, and it successfully went through both houses, but then it was too late, and the crunch at the end of the year, it just didn't get through. This particular bill, for example, brings amendments to the Uniform Principal and Income Act. Alaska is one of the states that's enacted that act to conform to final IRS regulations that were enacted and provide for more flexibility in that area. It amends Alaska's Uniform Transfer to Minors Act to allow for extensions of time if the minor, once the minor reaches an age of maturity, if the minor wants continued management of his or her assets, that can be done. It enacts a majority rule in the retirement account area that provides for protection for beneficiaries' interests. It also allows for the transfer of IRAs. In the life insurance area, it clarifies that trustees of life insurance trusts can have insurable interests and therefore can place life insurance policies into life insurance trusts. I mean, that's done almost universally around the 50 states, but our statute, when we examined it, was ambiguous in this area, so we're clarifying it. Also relieves trustees of life insurance trusts of liabilities with respect to insurance policies that the clients have purchased, and as far as having to keep track of those policies and the companies, as long as the clients are happy with the policies. It clarifies the remedies in the limited liability company and limited partnership area. The next, something in Alaska we've never had before, is provisions dealing with the disposition of human remains, and provides for a person, as part of their estate planning, can designate who's going to make those decisions after that person's death. And there's a form that's provided under that amendment. And that's important. I mean, and unfortunately, there have been a number of litigation events that have occurred when various family members argue over where someone's going to be buried and whether they're going to be cremated or whether they're going to be buried, what type of funeral, all of that. So that's going to be resolved here. Alaska in 1998 enacted an optional community property regime that provides a very important federal tax benefit, so that after the first spouse dies, both halves of the community property can receive a stepped-up basis, and this minimizes capital gains taxes when property is sold by the surviving spouse. And there are provisions here that clarify, under the community property regime, clarify title matters and rules for recovering improper gifts. The Act also enacts what are called decanting provisions, which decanting, of course, is often referred to as pouring wine from one bottle into another. And here we're talking about modifying trust, and the term vernacular decanting is used because essentially the assets of one trust are transferred to another to remedy problems that may occur when the tax law is changed, or if the drafting of the trust was erroneous or needs to be updated. So that's an overall summary of the bill. It's as was mentioned before by Mr. Hutchinson, our group has worked on this bill for almost 3 years. The first year it wasn't introduced. We just got it put together and two sponsors, but it was too late that year to introduce it. Last year it received a lot of support and success, but just didn't make it through. And so this is our third year, and it's an excellent bill, and urge your careful consideration of it and urge your support. I'm happy to answer any questions that I can. Thank you.
And I think all four of us on this committee heard it last year. So with the exception of maybe one or two provisions, my intention is to not go through in-depth hearing on this, but at our next meeting, my intention is to go a little more in-depth. But I do have Doug Vlatniker, and I have Beth Chapman online. Do you, Douglas, why don't you go ahead and give us an abbreviated testimony at this point, if you will, and then I will go to Beth, and then Wednesday we're going to bring this back up for a further discussion. Douglas? Can you hear us? How about Beth Chapman?
Sorry. Hi. This is Doug Blockmacher.
Okay,
I'm
Doug.
President.
Go ahead. You must have been either on mute or... anyway, give us your testimony, and I appreciate an abbreviated version today, and then Wednesday we're going to get into it a little more in depth.
Okay. Yes, this is Douglas Blockmacher, and I'm president and CEO of Alaska Trust Company. And we strongly support this legislation. We think it's a good piece of legislation and would recommend passage. We, however, and I'm not sure if this is the appropriate time, but we would like to have sections 37 and 38 removed. We think that they're will delay the bill, and they probably should have been in a separate bill on their own to give it more time for people to understand exactly what was trying to happen. Other than that, that's all I have to say.
And just as a bill sponsor, I'm going to tell you that my intention is to bring it back before the committee, minus that section, and explain to the committee why. So that will be the next version before this committee. So, Beth Chapman, you're online. Why don't you identify yourself, your affiliation, and give us some testimony.
Thank you, Chairman. This is Beth Chapman. I'm an attorney practicing in Juneau, primarily in the area of trust and estates. Along with Mr. Schaftel, I have been working on this bill for the past several years, and I support it. In my practice, it will help alleviate the need to go to court, particularly to respond to changing circumstances with families, and believe it is in the best interest of Alaskans. Thank you.
And for those who are testifying online, is there anybody who cannot be here on Wednesday to answer questions, any one of them? I can always push it off to Friday. All right, hearing done. Just let my office know if for some reason that's going to be a problem. My intention is to bring up the CS, a committee substitute, a committee substitute before the committee, minus the one section, and I'll explain why, and then we'll move forward on it. Thank you, Mr. Hutchison.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm about 4 minutes. Yes, Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know if this has been corrected or not, but in tab 8, it looks like there's a legal opinion dated March 26th, which says this could be this could violate the single subject rule. And maybe we get an attorney at some point to discuss that. Because
the what tab was that again?
Looks like tab 8.
Tab 8.
In my folder.
And the single subject rule.
Well, if we don't correct that, or if it is genuinely a problem, then we may be passing a bill that's unconstitutional.
Yeah. Why don't I have Mrs. Hutchison at least give the first response to that, and then we'll go from there.
And Senator Wilkowski, to the chair, we do have a legal opinion in response to that, and I'll make sure that's provided to your office. Yes, sir.
Yeah. I just asked, Mr. Chair, I'm just forgetting. I know we did a lot of trust work in the last few years. It's a pretty meaty bill. I don't want to waste the committee's time, but I'd have a hard time voting for this unless I understood what it did. So maybe I could get someone to sit down with me in my office and go over it with me section by section.
And that would be good. I will make sure that you have somebody visit your office. But my intention was not to try to brush over the bill. But just to get it introduced, have the tabs and everything in front of you today, and then on Wednesday, my intention is to delve into the meat of the bill.
Okay.
Right.
That's great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hutchison. And for those who are listening online, I hope you understood that. That was my intention all along, just to kind of bring it up, let you have the working document in front of you and what I was going to do. So, good. Thank you. I appreciate that. Believe me, I'm still working on understanding portions of it, and I've had legal counsel helping me. You know. But so we're going to set Senate Bill 65 aside, and I'm going to bring up House Bill 69 at this point. House Bill 69 is the issue we've been dealing with. Actually, I've had it before us in a couple of different versions, and at this point we're under the I version. And this, I wanted to have ample time for public testimony, so I let people know that this Monday was going to be one of the days when I would bring open for public testimony. And so with that, I'm just going to go right to public testimony, and then we can have some discussions on some of the merits. We have already adopted the Senate version I, and so that is before us. The portions that have some tension are section 2 under sub on page 3. Under sub 1, you have the A and B. That is one question. The other one is on page 5. Under subsection G, the Attorney General shall and then take legal action, basically. The tension that was there before, and which what you may hear from those who testify, was the original version had that you would arrest federal agents and charge them with a felony. And I think you may hear some more conversation on that today, and I wanted you to hear what I had been seeing in emails for several weeks now. So starting with, we have some folks in the Fairbanks LIO, and we have some in the off-net. And so what I'll do is I will go to a couple of off-nets first, and then I will go to the legislative office. Seymour Mills is in Sterling, is off-net. Seymour, can you hear us?
Yeah.
Why don't you just
put you
yourself...
Hear me?
We can hear you. Put yourself on the record with your name and any affiliation.
Seymour Mills, and I have no affiliation. This is just speaking for myself.
All right. And I'm going to try to keep it. It looks like we might be able to do about 3 minutes worth, so if you can keep it within that, that would be appreciated.
Yeah, I'll do that. You ready now?
Yes, go ahead.
Well, this new committee substitute for House Bill 69 wanders around from people to residents, citizens of Alaska, and then to persons of the state of Alaska, and I would like to know which one it's going to address. No funds are specifically cut from the Alaska State Troopers to enforce this unconstitutional memo called a law, and it says in one place that Attorney General may defend, and it also says the Attorney General shall defend. Again, what are we talking here? Senator Coghill's aide on the phone earlier today said that the reason for dropping the felony charge was that the Alaska State Troopers said they would not enforce that. And if I was an employee, as the Alaska State Troopers are, and I told my employer that I wouldn't obey something, I would be fired immediately. And that's a very good reason for us to have sheriffs elected as an officer by we the people, who would take an oath and post a bond to guarantee performance of his duty. There is a case in the Supreme Court a number of years ago, Lopez versus U.S., that spoke about not being able to use the Commerce Clause in firearms. It had to do with the firearm-free school zone, and Lopez took it immediately to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, the United States Supreme Court, that if this was to be used, then everything could be regulated by the Commerce Clause, so therefore it could not be used. And yet in this bill, it's referring back to the Commerce Clause, that the feds evidently are using that. And I am absolutely against this watered-down version of House Bill 69. If it's going to be, then it needs to be a felony, because that's what they will charge us with. And they need to be charged the same way, because this is absolutely unconstitutional. And I'm asking my state to stand between me and the feds. That's all I have to say.
Seymour, thank you for taking the time to call in, and I appreciate it. If there's anything written that you want to send in, you know, go ahead and send in some more, especially on any of the references on the different Attorney General things. So, and that goes for anybody else listening in. Thank you very much, Seymour.
Okay.
Lloyd Hilling is in Fairbanks. Lloyd?
Yes. Yes, I'm Lloyd Hilling. I'm a member of the City Council of the City of Fairbanks, although I don't speak for the council. Now, we are dealing, I'm dandying a six-month-old in my lap, so am I clear that this is the bill which will nullify, if you will, federal regulations on firearms by the state of Alaska?
That is correct.
My viewpoint is that the federal government can easily take care of Washington, D.C., and that Alaska is quite competent to decide how best to deal with their issues. That includes firearms, and that the fact that the Second Amendment is a prohibition not only on the federal government, but also on all entities, that people shall not have their rights to own firearms be infringed. It's clear, of course, that it's not clear, of course, precisely what one can, you know, how one can interpret the word infringe, whether regulation is infringement or not. But one thing is certain, and that is the Tenth Amendment makes it clear that the federal government should do only that which is expressly or directly implied in the Constitution. And such a thing as regulating firearms simply is not found in there. And I very steadfastly and very strenuously am behind this bill. And it's going to send a message. It'll rock the United States in a sense that Alaska is doing what Alaska should do, this far out back frontier. Thank you.
Lloyd, thank you very much for taking time to call in. We'll go to the Fairbanks Legislative Office at this point. We have Frank Turney first up. Frank, can you hear us?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you.
Well, Senator John Coghill and members of the Senate Judiciary, I heard one of the other people testify, and I just hope that this bill is not being watered down and that the bill be strong to protect Alaskan citizens from federal overlords. I know today is April Fool's Day, and I hope the Attorney General stands by the word shall versus may. And I don't see that changes in here as yet, that you change that to shall. Another thing, this is not an April Fool's joke. At the Alaska State Convention, somebody missed a vote. And I'm calling for the Attorney General to be elected by the citizens of Alaska. He is a strict constitutional Attorney General, and I don't think Mr. Garrity is a strict constitutional Attorney General to protect the citizens' rights of Alaska. Now, I hope this bill covers other infringement rights, not just besides the Second Amendment. And also, when it comes to due process, I think the most important constitutional rights is trial by jury, and I see that covers that on page 3B. Now, I wasn't aware, I hope the media picks up on that to inform the public. I wasn't aware that the Alaska's criminal code, 11.76.11, interfering with the constitutional rights of Alaskan citizens is a misdemeanor. Of course, myself, I'd rather see that a felony. But I'd sure like to know how many cases have been pursued under this so-called criminal code regarding the constitutional rights of citizens been violated. And also, this bill, I see no enforcement, no penalties, no penalties to the federal overlords. And I just hope that this bill is not watered down, if you could correct me. And as you know, Senator Coghill, I was hoping that you would have took some of the information, that you would have took some of the information from the state of Virginia, was the first state, to the House and the bill overwhelmingly, and the governor signed a state nullification against the National Defense Authorization Act regarding due process and denying the right to habeas corpus and trial by jury. And I would really like to see the word state nullification added to this bill. And I don't think we're done with this bill. I hope it don't go through the Senate as yet. There's got to be some changes made. And thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for not only your testimony today, but the work that you've helped me on trying to figure out the nullification language on this. I know it doesn't always get to the satisfaction of everybody. I'm trying to make something work that has teeth in it, but I understand everybody's consternation. Speaking of other people that testify, we have Lynette Clark also online in Fairbanks.
Good afternoon. This is Lynette Clark. I have been watching this bill since Representative Chenault introduced it. I was pleased that it went through the House as quickly as it did and into the Senate. I do want to see this come out of this legislative session as passed and signed by the governor. However, looking at the committee substitute, I was pleased with the entitlement summary, how the act was entitled. The thing that I've got problems with on this is that this work draft, dated 3/28/13, is missing references that were in the initial Senate Bill 75, and that is under Section 244.99.040, under all the way down to paragraph 2. It says the Real ID Act, and I'm real pleased that that's in there. But what's missing from the original Senate Bill 75 is Sections 3, 4, 5, both 3 and 4 having to do with the NDAA, and Section 5 is use of military force. We are in absolutely perilous times in this union of states. Many states are stepping up to the plate with nullification and legislation like has been submitted under this committee substitute. But if we don't respond with peace, with federal felony charges, because that's how they'll come at us, with penalties and enforcement, and the state's attorney general standing up for the individual Alaskan that may have this monster coming down around its throat, it's absolutely imperative that these changes be included from Senate Bill 75 into this draft. And after that, I'll be real pleased with it. But I want to see some peace, I guess, is the common thread here. I was pleased to see that there's reference to our statehood compact and how if the feds make changes, they got to come to us for a vote. And I don't see that come up out of anything in the last 50 years. But this is something that I am so pleased to see, jumped on immediately, put in place, work being done, the refinement continuing, and I'm hoping that what I have suggested and others have suggested that refinement be the inclusion of mentioning that NDAA in those two sections and the use of military force back into this bill and felony charges, because that's how they'll come get me. I thank you all for your time.
And I appreciate it, Lynette. And I agree with you. What I'm trying to do is figure out how we can use the state resources to challenge the feds without losing a court battle and still having teeth, but your point's well taken. I have, let's see, the Kenai LIO, I have David Lee.
Yes, my name is David Lee, I live in Nikiski. The changes to this bill on the penalties are abhorrent to me. I don't know what to say about them. We have a president that become the head of the UN Security Council in direct violation of Article 1, Section 9. He's had 3 U.S. citizens assassinated. Now, if this is a reason for nullification, I don't know what is. And if there's not felony charges on the federal government coming in here violating our constitutional rights, what good is any government? We need sheriffs in this state to back this bill up. The sheriffs are, we vote them in. We're their boss. We're not the boss of the state or the city cops. That's about all I got to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling in. I appreciate your comments and your time. Let's see, I have Wayne, is it Ozowski in Eagle River? Wayne? Wayne in Eagle River, is it Ozowski or? All right, I can go to Mike Coons in Lazy Mountain. Mike?
Yes, sir. I really wasn't going to get into this real big, but from what the testimony I'm hearing right now, this is Mike Coons from Lazy Mountain. Your comments, sir, on your concern that you may, we may lose a court battle on this if we arrest any feds that try to violate our constitutional rights. I'll take that. I think we could say we can take that right on up to the Supreme Court. And I think the thing that we've got to understand is that if we've got 12, 14 states all doing the same thing, all doing it with heavy penalties, criminal penalties, everything from the minimum of a Class A misdemeanor all the way up to Indiana, not exactly the bastion of the Constitution either, they're doing a Class D felony. So I think if all those states are doing the same thing, if this were to happen, and God forbid it happens, then I think we would have a really, 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 really strong case in the Supreme Court. And also I would ask that I would like to see one thing added to this bill if we can't go to this felony, and that is to add a direct reference to Last Statute 11.76.110, the interference with constitutional rights. At least that's a Class A misdemeanor, and that puts some teeth into it, and then being our law enforcement can't have something to do with. And then maybe next session we can get that statute changed to a felony. And thanks for your time. I'll talk to you on 83.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate your time. Is Wayne able to get to us? Wayne Ozowski? Ozowski, I'm sorry. Is he on?
Sir?
Yes. Go ahead, Wayne. Identify yourself. I may have mispronounced your name. Sorry.
Mr. Ozowski, you're good enough.
Go ahead and give us your testimony, Wayne.
Senator Collins, fellow members, my name is Wayne Ozowski. I represent myself. I want to thank you all for working to protect the Alaska citizens from the potential tyrannic government. Tyrannical government, I'm sorry. The president took an oath to defend and protect the Constitution. This president is in direct violation of that oath. If he was following that oath, this discussion would not be necessary. The president's executive orders and to push Congress to violate our Second Amendment rights are in direct conflict with the supreme law of the land, our Constitution. As even as important, violating separations of power, neither the president nor Congress have the right to violate natural born liberties. For we are born with those liberties. No man can give or take them away. Interference with the constitutional right. Will you insert Alaska Statute 11.76-110 into this bill if you're unwilling to bring back the Class D felony repercussions? The existing Senate version language, all Alaska is in a position of either allowing our liberties to be taken away when the DHS or the DATF come calling, or fighting back as U.S. citizens citizen's arrest under the Alaska statute 12.25.030. This may very well result in a shootout to stop the attack on our constitutional rights, the Second Amendment, the Fourth, the Fifth, and Ninth Amendments. Let it be known that no person wants this to happen. But if the DHS and the DATF would routinely disregard the Constitution, does then that fact, first shot, would be the second shot heard around the world? It's been stated just because some judge says it is not constitutional does not mean that he is right. Same with the law department. Just because people who have been gotten into the department under liberal governors say what they are doing is unenforceable or unconstitutional doesn't make it so. But we support the felony aspects of this bill as shown that there is a way to enforce that is constitutional for our state to protect our citizens. In closing, I ask you to take into consideration my and other testimonies to strengthen for the protection and life and liberty of Alaskans. Thank you for your opportunity to allow me to express my concerns and wishes.
Wayne, I really appreciate you taking the time to call in, as I have with all the people who have called in. And the point's not lost on me to go ahead and charge the any federal agent who wants to take especially any of our firearms and either confiscate them or somehow outlaw them. It's not lost on me that we should in every way stand up for our right both constitutionally and for the freedom that we have been guaranteed under our Constitution. So it's been with some trepidation that I've taken the felony language out, because I agree that we need to fight back in the strongest possible terms. But my fear is, in doing that, we end up weakening our position. So that's been my main focus all along. I don't mind pushing the Attorney General into action and defending the state of Alaska's citizens with their own constitution. So for those listening in, it is not to water the bill down. It's really to give it what I would consider the best kind of opportunity to be the best defense for Alaskans. So I put the version in front of the committee with that in mind. So I think that's the end of the public testimony. I mean, I don't have any other people online for this at this point. And so I'm going to open up a little bit on discussion on the felony question, and I want to get a sense of the committee. Senator Dyson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The felony question is obviously an important one. Just like you and your staff to consider on page 2, line 4, it says banning any firearm, and I think you mean banning any new regulations and so on and so forth, but there is the Act of 1934 or something. It's Class 3 weapons, fully automatic stuff. You know, and so I would encourage you to qualify what this means.
Okay.
Here.
Point well taken. I'll make a note of that and talk to my staff about that. I want to take the last 15 minutes or so to talk about House Bill 83, but I wanted to kind of get a sense from the committee on issues to deal with in this committee. For example, I had some pushback on page 3, lines 7 and lines 9, where we're saying that an order of the president that is applied to infringe on a person's right under the Second Amendment. It was suggested to me that I put the word illegally. That implies that you're going to take it probably to a court to find that out or get some kind of an opinion. And the National Defense Authorization Act, I will bring back before the committee and show what language I had previously put in there. And I think the Real ID Act, I could get clarity on. The National Defense Authorization Act is really kind of caught up in A and B here, where it's a person's right to keep and bear arms and a person's right to due process. So I'll go back and reread that. The real question is subsection G on page 5, and this is where the House version came over and said that if there was if you look under the original version, this is where the felony language came in, that it says, and I'll just read it out loud. An official agent or employee of the federal government who enforces or attempts to enforce a federal statute, regulation, rule, or other enforceable under F of this section is guilty of a Class C felony, may be punished as provided in our criminal code 1255.
I'm sorry, is that the R version?
This is the P version that came to us originally. I'm sorry, Senator Dyson, CS for House Bill 69. It's the P version, and it has that language in it that was referenced several times today. And it's the language that came to us from the House. And, you know, this, my dilemma is, I don't know if we could actually carry that forward, but as you can see from some public testimony, and they're just a sampling of the letters that I've gotten on this, and I think what it is I think people just feel that some of the federal regulations and enforcement rules are going to trump the Constitution, and we may not have a way to challenge them effectively, and they see Section F on that and the enforcement under G the way to challenge that. I simply said under that condition the Attorney General shall defend Alaskans, and this says that they shall charge them, they're guilty of a Class C felony, and those are the kind of the two really major differences. And I think a lot of people feel like that's pulling the teeth out of it, but I still think that's taking the full weight of the law of Alaska and putting it to work. And I don't want to hold on to this bill much longer. I've tried to figure out better and better ways to make it work. And so having heard some of this public testimony, I'll probably hold it over till Wednesday. I want you guys to think about it. But those are the three sections that I feel very strongly about, and my intention is to not hold it in one more meeting after this.
Yeah, Senator Wilkowski? I think it's a strong bill. It's very strong. I think you've done a good job. I think it was very clever, actually, what you did by saying that we're not going to allow any funds to be used for this. It was a very clever, creative way of dealing with the situation. I'm ready to support the bill when you want to move it out, Mr. Chairman.
I'm going to let it, I want to look at the section that Senator Dyson brought up on making sure that I didn't inadvertently have something inappropriate there. It may be just a reference problem. Then I'm going to bring it before the committee, and so Wednesday is my intention to bring it to a vote. So if you have any amendments, I want to make sure that you got a chance to hear from people publicly, and I mean it. I think I've had probably 120 emails that mirror what the testimony was today. So I'm being pushed pretty hard on it.
Yeah, would you go off the record for a moment?
Sure, let's go off the record for just a moment. Sidebar discussion upon the Attorney General and his powers, and it actually ended up with a comment on makes a good case for electing Attorney General. So My conversation on that has been when I want the Attorney General to support my governor, I don't want to elect it. And then when I disagree with the governor, I want to elect the Attorney General. So, and that's been the case on both sides of the aisle, I think.
He's his own attorney.
So I am going to hold this bill over. There's probably likely two amendments that we'll get to, and then my intention is to move it out Wednesday, get it to the floor as soon as I can, because I've held it for 3 weeks trying to figure out a solution. So it's not with any malice. It was just really trying to find a solution. So with that, I'm going to close public testimony on this House Bill 69. We're going to hold it over maybe for amendment and discussion on Wednesday. If no amendments, we'll move it out, and we'll get down to trust bill. And it's probably not as exciting as this. All right. And thanks to the speaker staff for being here, Tom Wright. All right. So we're going to lay 69 aside for now. We'll close public testimony. Now we're going to take up House Bill 83. House Bill 83 is dealing with a very similar issue. So we have Mr. Pound here who is carrying it for the sponsored. Mr. Jim, why don't you come on up here for a second? And I do have a couple people online, one to testify specifically. I have Mike Coons, who spoke to the last bill, who wants to speak to this. And then I have Mr. Jones on in Anchorage from the Attorney General's office, who I think is open to questions. Mr. Pound.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we did discuss this bill on Friday, and Senator Malachowski had several questions that needed to be addressed to Mr. Jones because I believe he can better answer those questions than I can. This is the one that I refer to as very similar language to HB 69, except you get to keep your powder dry. This is primarily a process of where federal statutes, regulations, executive orders, and secretarial orders that are passed by the federal government and federal agencies and are currently reviewed by the Attorney General's office, that the Attorney General will actually provide us a copy of that. When I say us, it would be the two judiciary chairs in both houses and the committee members, for them to review as well and decide if at such time they, judiciary committees on either side, may decide to introduce legislation that would ultimately nullify or at least make it so that it's those regulations, et cetera, are not applicable in the state of Alaska. And as I said, Senator Walkowski had some questions of the Attorney General, who was not present on Friday, and I believe Mr. Jones can answer those for you on the record.
Senator Walkowski, do you want to go ahead and have some questions to, I think it's Mr. Jones, who's in Anchorage on the phone?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was curious what the Attorney General's position was on the bill, if they saw any problems with implementation, whether or not this would lead to a lot of work.
It was the reporting mechanism,
right?
Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, it was mostly, I think, Section 3, the requirement to review federal statutes, regulations, presidential executive orders, secretarial orders. I know that's quite a bit of paper, a lot of documents, and I was just curious to what extent they do it now and to what extent this would, if any, cause them to need additional resources.
Mr. Jones, are you in line?
Mr. Chair, I am.
Thank you. Did you hear the question?
I did, Mr. Chair, and I'm happy to answer it.
Just put yourself on the record and your affiliation and give us that answer, please. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is David Jones. I'm an Assistant Attorney General in the Anchorage Office of the Department of Law. Senator Walkowski, through the chair, the Department of Law does not see problems with the bill. There was a similar version introduced in 2011 that imposed a requirement, or would have imposed a requirement, on the Attorney General's office to review all statutes, regulations, orders, etc., to determine whether there were any that raised those types of problems. Through discussions with Representative Keller, who sponsored that bill also, we ended up with language similar to the language of the current bill, which provides that the Attorney General will continue to review. And our understanding is that that would not impose an obligation on the Attorney General to review all statutes, all regulations, all orders, and actions to determine whether there were any that were potentially preemptive, but rather to continue our normal course. So with that understanding, we do not believe that it will impose a lot of work on the department.
Dave, this is Senator Coghill. On page 2, the section 2 is really kind of the operative section on receiving a report from the Attorney General. At that point, it says that it would have to report on a state law that is in conflict with a federal statute. And I know that from public testimony, some people feel it should be the other way around, that the federal law is in conflict with a state statute. But the conflict then becomes a huge question. Would it be, under this law, is it primarily constitutional conflict? Or because it deals with statutes, regulations, it must be all orders of conflict, I would take.
Mr. Chairman, because of the Supremacy Clause of the United States Constitution, almost any conflict is going to have some constitutional element to it, where there's a conflict between a federal provision and a state provision. So we could characterize it otherwise, but almost all of them are going to have some sort of constitutional element to them.
I appreciate that. It's been my experience, and I'm talking with committee members now, as a member of the Health and Social Services Committee, many times we were invited to accept money from the federal government if we would surrender certain issues, and I always bristled at that and often lost that battle, but that's one of the ways that they will bend you into accepting their rule with money. The good news is they don't have the wherewithal to do that much anymore. So any other questions for Mr. Jones? Senator Dyson.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about your words. Certainly seemed to me that the language here in one of these versions was that this passes, the Department of Law has the mission of going and looking for these conflicts throughout the length, width, and breadth of our statutes and the federal stuff. And then it seems you said here in your testimony today that all that what you wouldn't have a problem with the department wouldn't, because you just keep doing what you've been doing. Did I mishear you, sir?
Senator Dyson, through the chair, I don't believe you did mishear me. Obviously, there's currently more emphasis on those types of issues, and we're much more alert to those than we might have been 10, 20 years ago. But if we were to undertake a review of all federal statutes, regulations, and orders to determine whether any of them were potentially preemptive, we would have to add a significant number of staff members to do that.
Yeah, I understand that. So, please, if I may continue.
Yes, sir, Senator.
So I think what we want to happen is that you all are alert to the particular conflicts that really affect both our liberties and our actions here in the state. Am I right?
To the chair, Senator Dyson, that message is clearly received, understood, and will be accepted.
All right, well, certainly speaking for myself, I think most of my colleagues, we want to be very alert to protect our liberties. And I probably we will consider this a very significant part of your mission, and I appreciate you guys' work and you personally.
Thank you very much.
And I have Mike Coons online left to testify. And, Mike, I'd like to get you to chime in before the committee starts wrapping up. So, Mike, are you still there?
Yes, sir. Sir Coghill, members of the committee, my name is Mike Coons from Lazy Mountain. I'm speaking for myself. I truly hope that HB 83 is passed cleanly out of committee today. Representative Heller, as a sponsor, did great work to protect all of us from an out-of-control president. Representative Grunberg was very methodical, to the point of this layperson's frustration, making this bill solid from legal stance. I also encourage you to read Bob Byrd's written testimony in the documents pertaining to HB 69, which was an excellent history on nullification, which dovetails nicely into this bill. The need for this bill has been growing over the last 4 years in particular, but has been needed for decades since our federal government has been disregarding the 10th Amendment and placing burdens onto states with unfunded mandates and takings of state lands, specifically Carter and Clinton. It's too bad that HB 34 may not pass. It would have added to the strength of this bill, but I would encourage Representative Tammy Wilson to press on to the next session. Now we have President Obama, who along with a Democrat majority in the House and Senate passed Obamacare, the most far-reaching and disastrous law this nation has ever seen. Now, because we have a Congress divided, and sadly a House who is afraid to stop Obamacare by defunding and or a CR which will not give funds for Obamacare, President Obama sees this as a weakness. He is sadly right. So it is now incumbent on the states to stand up for our rights and for what is best for our state and her people. What is worse is that President Obama's view of this congressional weakness has resulted in an escalation of executive orders that enact law, which I note, I find no place in Article 2 of the Constitution that he has authority to do. In talking to Congressman Don Young's office this morning, they cite Article 2, Section 1, quote, the executive power shall be vested in the President of the United States, end quote. They cite presidents from George Washington to present who have written executive orders, yet, save for a few presidents, FDR and maybe Nixon as examples, none have reached this far. Our Constitution is about separation of powers, yet President Obama believes he can now write law. Examples just this past week are, quote, following rampant allegations of voter fraud in last November's presidential election, President Barack Obama defied his harshest critics this past week by quietly signing an executive order establishing a presidential administration dedicated to, among other things, registering non-English speaking citizens to vote, end quote. This from constitutionschool.com, dated March 31st this year. The other one was Obama, federal agents will enforce Obamacare even if your state says no, end quote. This is from MrConservative.com, dated 30 March this year, to name just two of the last couple days. In the past, we haven't needed to go this far. Would have been nice with Carter, though. Now we have, in my opinion, and the opinion of many others, a president who sees himself as the first dictator of the People's Republic of America. He is getting there by these executive orders and a Congress who has forgotten that their powers are limited by the people, and sadly, states who have allowed the 10th Amendment rights to be eroded one after the other. Please pass HB 83, and with ours and many other states doing the same, we can start taking back our nation, and maybe, just maybe, putting some backbone in Congress to stand with the Constitution and return to the limited powers that they have. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Coons, for taking your time to testify on both bills. Thank you. I have a couple minutes left. Any conversation amongst the committee?
Mr. Chair, I do, if this is the appropriate time, I do have an amendment. It's not an issue that we talked about the other day. It seemed like there was agreement on it.
And since we're down to the last minute, Do you want to stay here and work this out? We have a few minutes.
Yeah, it's very quick, Mr. Chair. Would you like me to offer this?
Anybody in the committee in such a hurry that they can't leave to go a couple minutes over?
All right. It's a very simple matter. I'd move Amendment Number 1, Mr. Chair.
I'll object so that you can explain it.
Okay. What the bill currently does is it requires the Attorney General to provide summaries of what's happening with federal statutes, federal regulations. And this just seems like a gap to me. If you look at page 3, there's got to be written opinions regarding the basis for finding that statutes are unconstitutional, litigation that the Attorney General is party to or aware to. But it doesn't require the Attorney General to actually provide a summary of the litigation against the federal government. And so I brought this up last week. It just seemed like there was some agreement with it. And it's not a particularly complex amendment. Happy to answer any questions if people have any.
Well, first of all, any comment from the bill sponsor?
We would find it an unfriendly amendment. I believe it'll add a fiscal note to the bill, which is unnecessary. And it's just the first time I've seen the amendment. And it was not passed on into my office at all prior to right now.
But to be fair, he did bring that up. The last committee that he was going to bring it up, there had been no contact between you and them on
Mr. Chair, no,
maybe
sir.
What the fiscal impact may be?
No, sir, there was not.
I mean, it's, for me, having a summarization of litigation seemed reasonable. It may very well add an impact. Senator Dyson, you had a question?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I either wasn't paying attention or missed something here, but Senator Walkowski, it seems like the Keller version that we have has the Attorney General reviewing all of this stuff that the feds are doing and giving us a list of what our problems under our Constitution are, our law. And it seems like what your amendment does is just have him giving a list of the things that went to court.
Exactly. That's exactly what it does, Mr. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, so I think that's a substantial change. You know, it might be right, you know, but a substantial change from the bill sponsor.
Well, if I could, Mr. Chair, I asked the Attorney General if there was, or the attorney who was speaking, if there was a fiscal note. It seemed to me what is being asked in this bill is to review tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of documents, prepare memos of every document that is potentially in conflict with our regulation and or statutes. There's no fiscal note to that. This is simply saying summarize litigation that the state is involved in. And I think that's pertinent information for the Judiciary Committees and legislators as a whole to be aware of. If we're asking them to summarize, give written opinions as to why things are illegal, but we're not asking for the actual summary of the litigation, that just seems to be a gap to me, which is probably very easily filled. I can't imagine there's a fiscal note to it.
Is Mr. Jones still online?
Mr. Chairman, I am.
Have you had a chance to take a look at the amendment that is being considered in front of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I have not.
I think it's only fair that to both the sponsor and to the committee that we get an opportunity to have the commission, in this kind of respect to the maker of the bill, that either Mr. Jones or somebody who can would be able to quantify, you know, the cost of this.
Yeah.
I'm more sympathetic to the amendment than not, but it'd be interesting to hear what the difference is.
And I'll just say, Mr. Chair, there was no attempt to hide the ball here. You can look at the date. It's today's date that I just got it.
Uh-huh.
I literally just saw it probably an hour ago, and maybe a couple hours ago my office got it. I think we shared it with your office, I believe. So I have no intent to hide the ball, but we just simply got it. today.
We're going to go into the 24-hour rule probably starting this week, and if it goes to a finance committee, I want it to go either on purpose with some recommendation. If we feel like a fiscal impact is too high, then that probably could have an impact on it at this late date. And if that's a consideration of the sponsor, which it sounds like it is, that might be something we want to look at. But Senator Dyson?
Yeah, I must be missing something. To me, the issue isn't money. The issue is, what do we want an attorney general doing? Do we just want him to tell us what this particular attorney general under this particular governor thought was worth taking to court? Or do we want to know about all of the things that the federal government may do that are in contrast or conflict with our statutes and our Constitution? That's a profound difference, I think. And I don't see the money issue being the driver here. And under the bill that came from the sponsor, we've heard, I think, Mr. Jones said, you know, not a huge, huge fiscal note, and Senator Willikowski's amendment here would reduce, but logically would reduce whatever that is. So it's either the sponsor's undetermined fiscal note or something less is the financial issue, unless I'm missing something.
And if I could, and maybe I'm not sure if I'm being clear enough, but we're not taking anything out. We're simply adding a section. We're not taking anything out, Senator Dyson. Oh, we're just simply adding that they provide this additional summary of litigation.
Then I was missing something, for which there's precedent.
And to be fair, we're asking for a legal summary of court actions, which is probably different than what are some of the regulations, rules, other issues that may be in conflict. So the litigation is in conflict, whereas the others may be in conflict. And I think that may be some nuance there. But we're looking at conflicts between the state and the feds, and that was why I was kind of more open to the discussion.
Mr. Chair, this is a difference between past and future. Litigation is what's taking place now and has taken place. Regulations, secretarial orders, and executive orders are what's going to happen in the future or happening right now.
Yeah. You guys want to consider it over till Wednesday?
Yes.
Sure.
All right.
Unless you're ready to vote.
So when we...
Yeah, we're ready to vote yes on it.
I think it'd be wise to get some numbers put to it.
Sure.
And I agree with Senator in that numbers aren't the only question, but it is a little different question than the rest of the bill. And we've run ourselves over time. And so I think what I'd do is hold the amendment in motion. So it's the first thing we deal with when we come up. We'll deal with this bill. We'll dispatch one way or the other this amendment, and then we'll act on the bill accordingly. And then 69 will come up with any recommendations and debate, all right?
Excellent.
Got it?
Thank you.
All right. With that, we're adjourned, holding an amendment in the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.